From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Have you ever dreamed about starting a business with your best friend? Or your spouse, or just someone you really like. It sounds like it would be perfect, right? You get to spend more time with them. You build something together. You have someone who you already know that you trust and who you work well with together. But it doesn't always go so smoothly.
We had an enormous test. So we had two or three enormous tests.
And not fun tests that test a business. Tests that test a central relationship in these women's lives.
It was really tough for a while.
Yeah.
And you will hear the details of all that soon, I promise. But first, why don't we meet the women whose voices you are hearing? Two best friends, two co-founders, but could have been two ex-best friends and two ex-co-founders had they not played it right.
So I am Julie Griggs from New Jersey and now live in New York City, where I am both a physician assistant and also co-founder and CEO of 4Play Social.
And I am Danielle Dietzek. I am the other half of 4Play Social, the other co-founder and chief growth officer. I'm from Connecticut and I am also a healthcare provider. I'm a nurse and nurse practitioner.
Oh, I appreciate the completely extraneous information about where you live and where you grew up, but thank you.
I was like, wait a second, are we following this formula of...
I'm going to be honest, I had COVID last month and my brain is not working the same.
I shouldn't have trusted you.
Yeah.
As you can hear, Julie and Danielle have a lot of fun together, which is great considering the vast amount of time that they spend together. And today we're talking about how two people like them can make it work, which is to say, to make sure that their friendship is healthy and that their co-founder relationship and their company is healthy. It's not easy. You have to build systems. You have to be incredibly intentional. Today on Problem Solvers, Julie and Danielle are going to pull back the curtain, get very personal on what that looks like and how they have done it. So what are they building, by the way? What is 4Play?
4Play is a social discovery app where single friends team up and match with other pairs of single friends for a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people.
And why does it exist? What is the problem you're solving?
That dating apps have completely ruined single life. They are not fun. They are high pressure, and they pose a legitimate risk to both physical and emotional safety and well-being.
This idea for 4Play started because Danielle and Julie wanted to solve a personal problem for themselves. They didn't really initially set out to build a company together. And one of them, in fact, was much more interested in building a company together than the other one. It wasn't easy. But you know what? None of this should be easy, because fostering a really important personal relationship, that requires work. Building a company, that requires work. You have to be, as I said a moment ago, intentional about it. And these two women are. So after the break, they're going to explain how. On this show, we talk a lot about entrepreneurs who tackled business problems and came out the other end more successful. It's about learning from those experiences so that you can grow your business the smart way. Well, now U.S. Bank is offering a new product called U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power World Elite MasterCard. With this card, you can earn 2 times the points on whatever you're buying for your business, as well as a 75,000-point bonus. Just spend $10,000 on the account owner's card in the first 120 days of opening your account. There's no categories to remember or hoops to jump through. Just use the card for any purchases related to your business and earn 2 times the points with no caps or expiration. How easy is that? Just because it's passive doesn't mean it's not powerful. It's the U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power Card. Power. See, it's right there in the name. So, work smarter, not harder, with this great credit card that puts more point earning power in your pocket. Apply for the U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power Card today at usbank.com/bizpower. That's usbank.com/bizpower. /biz, B-I-Z, power. Limited time offer. The creditor and issuer of this card is U.S. Bank National Association, pursuant to a license from MasterCard International Incorporated. MasterCard is a registered trademark, and the circle's design is a trademark of MasterCard International Incorporated. Some restrictions may apply.
And now, our second sponsor.
Looking for a rewarding, life-changing opportunity that enhances the lives of children in your community? With almost 50 years of experience, Huntington Learning Center is the nation's leading K-12 tutoring and test prep franchise, dedicated to shaping brighter futures for our students and franchisees. Huntington is the top revenue-producing supplemental education franchise in the U.S., and our proven system is the key to success for you and your students. The Huntington Advantage includes low startup cost, turnkey systems, dedicated support teams, national and local marketing support, and multiple revenue streams to help you build a life-enriching and profitable business. No education experience needed. In today's environment, the need for tutoring has never been greater. When you become part of Huntington Learning Center, you're filling an urgent need in the growing $5 billion supplemental education industry. To learn more, visit huntingtonfranchise.com. Make a meaningful difference, pursue your dreams of business ownership, and be a positive force in your community. Don't wait. Visit huntingtonfranchise.com today. All right, we're back talking with Julie and Danielle, the co-founders and best friends behind the dating app Foreplay. And we're going to be talking about some pretty personal stuff of theirs and some really wonderful advice that they have about how to work together, work with people that you love. But let's start at the top. Let's start with where this company came from and how the idea brought them together in ways they never expected. The first voice you hear is Julie's.
So we were best friends who were solving our own problem, which was that we hated using the dating apps and wanted to find a way to do it together so that we can enjoy both our personal lives and our dating lives. And as a result of that, accidentally created this business. And it was not really ever supposed to be something that we were leaving our jobs in healthcare to pursue. So as a result, we didn't really think much of it. We just had an idea and it just escalated from there.
Oops.
Let's dig into the oops. Did you worry at any point, or did it occur to you even at the beginning that doing this thing together, which must have felt really fun at first and hopefully still does feel fun most of the time, could also be a very complicating factor in a great friendship?
Definitely. There was a concern. And in the beginning, we had a conversation about how we would always prioritize the friendship and how that would be the only way that it would work as business partners. And while people who are quote unquote business people or investors might say, oh, you're prioritizing the personal relationship over the business relationship, how is that good for the business? In reality, I think it's actually helped our business succeed because we are solid co-founders for that reason. So it's always been number one, friendship, maintain the integrity of the friendship. And if that value guides us, then we'll be okay.
Also, I think it's important for us to just be totally honest that it was not great in the beginning in that Danielle had zero interest in being a co-founder and she had zero interest in starting a business. And if not for my family, specifically my brother, like pushing us to do it, I don't know if it ever would have actually happened. She would come home from work and be like, can you please remove me from your group chats with your brother? And I was like, it's a great idea. And then one day she came home and I was like, we're going to call it Foreplay. And she was like, okay, now I'm in because I'm not going to miss the opportunity to have a company called Foreplay. But because she really wasn't interested in the beginning, we definitely had a very big hurdle of I was all in and she was partly in, which we had to navigate in the beginning.
That's frustrating. My wife and I wrote a romantic comedy novel together a number of years ago. Yes, I know. Totally darling, isn't it? Called Mr. Nice Guy. You can find it wherever you find books. And the greatest source of tension in the creation of that book was that she was far more motivated to work on it than I was. I had a whole lot of other writing projects and this idea of doing a book was like a fun thing to do on the side. Whereas Jen, my wife, makes books a central part of her day and her product. She's written 5 or 6 of them. And so there would be these times where she would have done far more than her share, and she was waiting on me, and she was really annoyed with me. And it made me realize that one of the first things that has to happen with a partnership of any kind is a real understanding of the roles and responsibilities on both sides. And if not equal involvement, then at least a clear understanding of what each person's involvement should be. So it's interesting that you guys started with that kind of lopsided. Julie, I imagine that was frustrating for you as you wanted to get this thing going and Danielle was feeling like a drag on the process.
So it wasn't that frustrating because I had already known Danielle for 12 years. And so I knew what I was getting. Here's the thing. I felt from the beginning, and I still believe it wholeheartedly, 4Play would not be successful if Danielle was not my co-founder. I knew that. I knew the value that Danielle brought. The value that Danielle brought was that she was Danielle. Everyone that meets her loves her. She is truly the nicest, most gracious person. And in the beginning, my siblings were like, if she's not interested, why don't you just do it without her? And I was like, because it won't be successful. I know that I need Danielle in order for this to be a success. So I knew that that was the value that she was bringing in the beginning. The value that I was bringing in the beginning is that I am like a crazy work animal. And so I was on startabusiness.com and got us to be an LLC in 2 days and was finding the dev shops that we were going to outsource to. So I knew early on where each of our strengths and value lied, but it became more and more frustrating as we started to actually become a business and she was still not fully in it.
Danielle is nodding. All right, let's get into that. But first, I want to establish one other thing, which is that you said this very nice thing about how you both agreed at the very beginning to prioritize the friendship. It's one thing to say that. It's another thing to do it when things get more challenging, as we'll talk about in a second. So did you come up with any kind of system or thing to check in on or some way to make sure that actually carried through in practice as you embarked upon the journey?
Definitely. And I even have some examples of how this came into play and how difficult it was. But something that's really basic that we established from day one is that we will only communicate on WhatsApp for work-related communication. And we will only communicate on iMessage and phone call for personal conversation. And
Wait, but phone call? So you couldn't have a business phone call?
You can only WhatsApp call.
Yes.
You cannot.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if Julie ever, and believe me, there are slip-ups and they're awful, but once in a blue moon, we slip up. Julie will call me accidentally on a regular phone call. And I'll answer because I think it's going to be a personal conversation and then it's work related. And then I immediately remind her that she has called me through regular phone and then she calls me back on WhatsApp and I can determine whether or not I'm answering a work call. But
my personal favorite is when we are on a regular phone call and then I say, okay, I have to go. I have a work call. And then I hang up and then call her on WhatsApp.
Call her on there.
So that's one way that is a really strict boundary for us. And it sounds silly, but it really actually does work. So
yeah,
I would recommend using different channels.
And I mean, I really love that. Just articulate why it works.
It works because I understand if Julie wants to open up to me about something she's struggling with, and that thing happens to be related to her job, I understand that my role is to be her friend if she's texting me about it or calling me on the phone. I understand that this is something that she might be struggling with personally, let's say. And so I am not going to respond in a professionally solution-oriented kind of way, as opposed to if she were to call me on a WhatsApp call, I would be looking for solutions as to how this could affect the business. So it's really about the way that it activates what hat I'm going to put on. And I think for you, you would say the same.
I would also add that, and if anyone goes into business with their partner, romantic partner, or their friend, you will soon learn that every conversation becomes about your business. and then what is left of your relationship. Like we said last night, if we weren't co-founders anymore, what would we talk about all day, every day? And so it's a good way for us to have a boundary of work is ending now and let's go back to being friends. And I think that's really important.
Very well said. Okay. Let's talk about this whole thing getting rocky. So we've embarked upon it. We have laid some great groundwork. We have prioritized the friendship. And now you're going to have to put that to the test. What did that look like?
We had an enormous test. So we had two or three enormous tests. But the first one was, and I wasn't planning on disclosing this, but in the midst of starting the business, I was struggling actively with an eating disorder. And I was getting treatment for it locally. And it wasn't really impacting the way that I was working. However, it started to get worse. And it was recommended to me that I go to residential treatment where I wouldn't have any access to computer, phone, like I wouldn't be able to communicate. And so that was a very tough situation to deal with because I felt as though I needed to ask Julie's permission as my co-founder if I could take time off from work. But I also knew that I'm also her friend. And so I believe that she should allow me to do that because she knows it's what's best for me. So that was the first test. And that's
what happened.
And that's where Julie definitely prioritized the friendship.
You also have selective memory about it, which understandably, but we were in the car on the way to visit Penn State, which is where we went to college with our other friend. And we were talking openly about how Danielle was struggling. And Danielle said, they want me to go to inpatient. And our friend Katie said, why aren't you? And Danielle said, I can't do that because of foreplay. And when we got back from the weekend, I had a conversation with Danielle being like, if you're using foreplay as the reason why you can't go, it's not a reason and you have to go, because she was also being a really bad co-founder because she wasn't in a place that she could be a co-founder. How could you possibly run a business when you are having enormous difficulty running yourself as a person, right? And everything was in disarray in her personal life. And so how could you be responsible and actively run a business? So
right.
To me, it was, if we want the business to succeed, you have to go away to get better.
Ended up being 2 months. And sayonara. And I want you to do this and there's no bad blood and I want you to get better and I want you to grow as a person. And that's wonderful and you should do that. And I will take over the business myself and I will replace you with somebody else. And that also was an option that we didn't consider.
Yeah, that's interesting. It was an option. It was an option, technically speaking, right? And if you're just laying out every possible scenario, then it was an option. But if I think back to why Julie said that she wanted you in this business, it was because foundationally, she didn't think that this business would succeed without you. And so if that's her foundational understanding of the dynamics of you two, then I would understand. I could understand. And Julie, you jump in here and speak for yourself, but I would imagine that vision wouldn't have changed. And it would be clear that you would still feel like this business only exists if Danielle's a part of it.
I for sure did. And what Danielle was suggesting as a solution kind of naturally evolved as one. So Danielle left and we were like 2 weeks out from launching the app. And I was 2 weeks into my first full-time job as a PA with a patient population that doesn't speak English. So I was learning medical Spanish and doing all of that. And was definitely in over my head with everything and trying to figure out how you balance having this business, making sure your friend is okay, making sure your friend's parents feel like they're still included in the business because they gave an initial investment with your parents to get it going and everyone's a stakeholder and everyone should feel included, and also really needing help. And then having people help you, like my sister and our other best friend, Danny, shout out to Danny, and then feeling guilty when Danielle came back of what's everyone's position now and what happens now, and having 2 months by myself essentially without Danielle and naturally falling into the role, I think, of the CEO/COO, and then Danielle coming back and feeling like this isn't my business anymore and you've totally taken over, but I had to take over.
Yeah, what for happened? Sure. For sure.
How did you resolve that?
It was tough.
It was really tough for a while.
Yeah.
Julie had also gotten her siblings involved, and what I felt was happening was that the family all kind of backed each other on decisions. And then I always felt like I was the odd one out. And so then I felt like it was more that they had more ownership of the company, even though they didn't. And so I actually needed to say to Julie, I don't believe that they can work with us anymore. I think it's just not healthy. It's not healthy for us. And that was a really difficult conversation that then she needed to have with her siblings. And then later I was also looped in and I spoke to them myself. But that was another example of a challenging time where I felt that was putting the friendship first, because I was feeling as though in the friendship, I was feeling resentful. And so we had to put the friendship first in that scenario, which in turn did help the business.
And this is why people lose friendships when they go into business with their friend, because how complicated and muddy are those waters right there? I broke every rule in the book. I did it with my friends. I did it with my family. Every rule about what you shouldn't do when you start a business, I did. That was challenging. But I think what it comes down to ultimately of how we were able to navigate that is our moral compass and our values are aligned. I know what Danielle's values are, and I know that they're aligned with mine. And I know that she is a good person, and I know that she wants the best for me. And I didn't have to question her motives. And I think that you felt the same for me. And I think what just realistically happened was I went through the learning curve of learning how to run a business 2 months before she did. And when she came back, she had to go through that learning curve. And so she was making mistakes that I then had to correct. And then she felt like I was micromanaging her, which led to a lot of very difficult conversations and crying. She really cries. I don't really cry, but Danielle crying and me saying, I feel like I'm the husband who just, I can't win if I do or if I don't, like it's wrong.
She walked out on me one day, like the huffy puffy husband. She walked out. She was like, I can't be here with you.
But it's because we're able to have those conversations, which not every friendship can handle that. We can handle the really hard conversations and we don't hold back because we know that the intentions are genuine. No one is malicious.
What do you think enabled you to survive that moment, both as friends and as a business? So have you ever replayed that whole time from some kind of counterfactual where it fell apart? And what do you think was the moment in which it could have fallen apart, but was saved?
I think the moment when I got home and her siblings were involved in the business was a critical moment. If I had never said they should take a backseat, which was really difficult to say, but if I had never said it, I do think the business probably would fall apart or would have taken a different direction and might not still be successful today. I think that tactically, I feel that there needs to be a rule about outside people who come in and help. And do those people need to be consultants, or can they be friends, or can they be family? And we have just, from that day moving forward, have really just made the rule that they can't be family, because then there are egos involved and you want to protect your sibling's ego and make sure that their feelings aren't heard. But that's not as important to me as it is to Julie, because it's her sibling. So yeah, I think I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but
no, I understand. What you're laying out here is at the core of this business is a complex, not in a bad way, but the relationship that you two have is complex. It is both a strong friendship, but now also a business partnership. And you had to figure out structures where that worked. Adding any more complexity to the relationships of the people who are making the core decisions of this business is too much complexity. It reminds me, in a way, of a conversation I once had with a co-founder of a business who'd started the business with some number of friends. I can't remember, 3, 4, 5 friends. And they were having really complicated leadership challenges. One of them had become CEO, but the CEO was not leading the way that a CEO would lead. And as we talked, I realized, I think part of the problem here is that you guys don't have a hierarchy when you're friends, but there is a hierarchy with the business. And I think either the people who are not CEO do not want to defer to the friend who is CEO, or the friend who is CEO doesn't feel like he has the authority to boss his friends around.
Yeah.
And like something about this is not working. And you guys need to make a decision about how you operate as business people that is separate in a way from how you operate as friends. That was a hurdle that you guys anticipated at the beginning, but the level of complexity that followed meant that you needed to, in a way, figure out what was going to be simple about this so that other parts could be complex.
Absolutely.
And to answer your question about what we think salvaged it, Danielle's answer is her answer, but my answer would be that we had a conversation with an early stage VC fund manager and who ended up becoming an investor in the company. And she said, I can't invest unless one of you is the CEO. Like this whole co-founder, co-CEO is not going to work for us because if there is an emergency in the middle of the night, whether it's amazing or whether it's tragic, who am I calling? I need to know. And we said we understood that. And when she pushed back as to why don't you have a CEO, I remember Danielle said that she was worried that if I became CEO, then when we got more investors, when people started taking board seats, they were going to want to oust Danielle and replace her. And so it was a way of protecting her position in the business. And the investor totally rebutted that and was like, you don't see the value that you bring, that you are literally leading growth and you single-handedly acquired tens of thousands of people to this app as a nurse. Like it's insane. And she told us in that moment that it's not about that. It's just about you have to go from playing startup to being a startup. And so we hung up with her. And we talked about it. And Danielle said, I think you're clearly the CEO. And I really appreciated that. And it really meant a lot. And it still does. And so we moved forward with our role titles. And it came with each of us owning our own domain of the business and being in charge of something, having ownership over something instead of sharing everything. And I think that actually saved the business.
Yeah. And the hierarchical part of it is certainly complex, and it's important to not allow that to bleed into the personal relationship for sure. But I also felt a sense of relief when a hierarchy was established. And I think I felt a sense of relief because then, like Julie said, then I could actually own something. I didn't need to fight anymore. I didn't need to fight for what I was owning. I owned something.
That's a great point. The reaction that you were having about being worried about being ousted was in some way a reaction because you didn't know what part of this you owned and controlled. If you both share everything, then you don't own anything. And carving it up, even if you don't end up as CEO, means that your value becomes clearer because the things that you're running either work or they don't. And you can show that they work.
Definitely.
Danielle, why did you have the instinct to turn to Julie and say, you're clearly the CEO?
This is another reason why I think we work as co-founders is because we both recognize each other's strengths and weaknesses. I do not naturally possess CEO qualities. And I'm okay with that. I am not a rule follower. I like to do things my own way. That would potentially work if I was a solo founder. Definitely doesn't work as a co-founder. I am extremely disorganized. I guess it's organized chaos. I know what's going on, but nobody else does. And I'm not as good at those kind of administrative things as Julie is. She is naturally, it is innate to her to be orderly, to know rules, to follow up on things. She's just really good at that stuff. So I felt like that was really obvious. That was obvious before we had a business. If we go on vacation together, I know what roles are going to be delineated. So if it just made sense.
I'm a type A control freak.
Yep. You were the CEO of the vacation.
Yeah. So I guess it's not really a vacation if you're CEOing it, right?
And I have ADHD. And for me, it's what works for me is the people stuff. And that's what motivates me. Julie is actually very motivated by checklists. I'm not. So it works for her to have things to do and to accomplish those things. And for me, I need to be involved with people, not checklists. And the checklist part of my job are the worst part of my job. And so I really like the part that I own. Sometimes I feel bad for Julie that she doesn't.
I feel bad for myself too.
She doesn't do any of the fun stuff.
That's a wonderful way of breaking it out. And also, Danielle, I just want to emphasize the way that you framed it for yourself, because I think it's useful for others to hear. You don't have to be good at everything. It's not part of the equation. You have to know what you're good at and then go be good at that. That's actually the job. And some of the most successful people that I have ever met went through some process similar to what you guys are describing, where they were confronted with their limitations is not the right word, but that's how they would have seen it at first. What can't they do? But then realized that once they identified the thing that they could do and then were able to double down on that, that they were far more valuable than they'd ever been before. The classic story that I tell is of Mark Randolph, the first CEO of Netflix, who co-founded it with Reed Hastings. And then a couple years in, Reed Hastings basically tells Mark, I think that you should step down as CEO and I should take over. And that was a really hard thing for Mark to hear until he realized that actually Reed was totally right. And the reason he was right is because Mark's skill set is not being a scale CEO. Mark's skill set is turning an idea into a business, which is an incredibly hard thing to do, but it's different from growing a business to a $1 billion business. So once he realized that, he realized he had done his work already. And it was time for someone else with a different skill set to now take over and do the next part of this business. And Mark can go doubling down on doing this over and over again. He can help other people take ideas to business. There's so many things that you can do. A line I love using for this is nobody ever said Shaquille O'Neal is a terrible basketball player because he couldn't shoot three-pointers. Because, like, it doesn't matter. Who cares? He was really good at the thing he was good at. What I'm hearing you articulate is a recognition of that in yourself. And that put you in a position to win at everything that you are great at.
Yes. Thank you for putting it that way. And I would also say that naming it to one another is equally as important as recognizing it within yourself. I needed to say out loud to Julie, this is what I am good at. This is not what I am good at. I needed to hear her say she agrees. And so that anytime moving forward, if she references that as why she should be doing something, it's okay. We've already established it. We've already talked about it. It's not a surprise to me, and vice versa. And that is a really important piece.
Julie, what was happening in your head at that moment? You guys got off this phone call with the investor. I presume you were thinking, be honest, I should be the CEO of this company.
Actually, I think on the phone call, I think Leslie said on the phone call, and I think Julie is the CEO.
I think she did.
To us. And that was like the first time anyone ever said it.
And I think you were shitting your pants.
I was like beyond unwell. We hung up and I was like, are you okay? Because I felt like it was like a betrayal.
Yeah.
Which is such a confusing feeling. Listen, we are both, Danielle and I are both crazy empaths, like to a fault. It's really difficult. And I felt really guilty about it. But then when Danielle was like, you really are the CEO, I felt, okay, this is better. And then we said, let's try systems and let's try to use Jira or Asana, whatever it was at the time. And let's try to do these structural things. And Danielle didn't like it because she doesn't like that.
And then it made sense. Then the person who's using it should be the CEO.
And then
the person who's assigning the tasks that are not ever being noticed by the other person.
She should continue to assign those tasks to her. So then I felt really guilty. It took me a long time. And partly because I knew how hard Danielle was on herself when she had come back from treatment and felt like she was making mistakes and that she was self-conscious about it. Honestly, it also happened like when you have your other podcast or Help Wanted. And I was very fortunate that you guys had me on. It was a surprise to me. And when I came home, the first thing I said to Danielle was, I swear I did not know that I was going to be on the podcast. It was our first time we ever did a podcast not together. And I had guilt about it because I was like, she's going to think I'm trying to forge my own path without her. But she was like, dude, you made that connection. Good for you. That is awesome. And tell me everything and how to go and what you guys talk about. And that was a moment for me that I realized it's okay for us to do our own thing. because neither one of us wants to oust the other one. And we know that we have the synergy that we have together far outweighs the skill set that either of us have independently.
That is so interesting. Context for everything you just said there is that, Julie, you and I first met because you had reached out to my co-host, Nicole Lappin, on another show that I host called Help Wanted. And I wasn't part of any of the discussions. So all I knew is that we were taping a bunch of episodes one day and that you had reached out and that they had invited you up. And I think everyone understood that you were going to be on the show, except I guess you. Maybe that had not been communicated to you. So you show up and suddenly we put you in the hot seat and we start taping. And it was a really lovely conversation. So it's so interesting to hear that was a very fish out of water moment for you. But what I'm hearing as a result of that and the thing that you guys discovered was if you two have to do everything together, then you can only do half of the things that you otherwise would be able to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that was an amazing opportunity for us to realize that we need to stop doing everything together. We stopped pitching investors together. We stopped doing every podcast together. The other day, Danielle was like, I have an interview with someone from Boston, a reporter. She didn't invite me to join. I didn't care. I had other things to do. And I think that's also the differentiator between playing startup and being a startup, right? Like you realize that you don't need to be involved in everything. It's actually better to not be. You can get more done.
Yeah. All right. This has been a really wonderful arc. And I love how thoughtful the two of you have been about the business and your relationship together. So let's just end on this. What does the dynamic look like now? Take me into a moment in which the two of you maybe disagreed. And Julie, as CEO, you had to make a CEO decision.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. In terms of a CEO decision, I have to think.
Recently, you had one.
Which one was it?
When you were like, I'm going to put money into. Oh, what was it?
We'll talk about that. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to be specific, but I'm just curious about what happens when this wonderful balance that you have struck runs up against the very real structure of a business.
Yeah, it goes back to what I know I'm good at and what I know Danielle is good at. And I think what being a good leader means is being able to delegate and being able to trust your team, your teammates. I think if you're a ball hog, then your team probably sucks and you don't trust them to give them the ball. Recently, there was a conversation had where Danielle wanted to spend a significant amount of money that we've never spent before on a campaign for brand awareness. And 2 months ago, I would have said, absolutely not. But she came to with a plan and she was like, and this is why I think it's going to work. And as much as I wanted to say no, that's not my strong suit. That's not where I thrive. I don't know. I pretend to be Gen Z on TikTok to get Gen Z users. I'm not Gen Z. I don't really know. Danielle thrives there. That's her bread and butter. It goes back to not having an ego to recognize where you are stronger and where your other teammates are stronger. The dynamic now for us is very much me actively working on relinquishing control. We just had a conversation today where I said, I'm going to have her start doing something with spreadsheets that I normally do because it falls in the realm of user acquisition and that's her arm of the business. And so I need to relinquish control. So it's actively just trying to be more mindful and trying to do what's best for the business by allowing everyone to play their part in what they're best at for the business.
That you are where you are and we are having this conversation is, I think, a real testament to the thoughtfulness that you guys have put both into the relationship and the business. And I really appreciate you sharing both of it with me.
Thank you
for having us.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonfeifer.com, JASONFEIFER.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonfeifer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.